Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
Well, it is my pleasure to welcome Greg Holtz from the Marshall Institute. Welcome, Greg.
Well, thanks a lot, James. We're really looking forward to having a chat.
Excellent. So, Greg, for those that aren't familiar with you, you're a CMRP. You're also the CEO and president of the Marshall Institute. You're a passionate leader in maintenance and reliability, and you started off, similar to me, as an electrician working in the field. Eventually, you became a manager of continuous improvement at SKF, leading Lean, TPM, and Six Sigma deployments. You have over 17 years' experience in consulting, training, and facilitating workshops, by looks of it, globally. Did I miss any major pieces?
Well, I think to summarize it pretty well, I am definitely passionate about maintenance and reliability, and my career has been centered around TPM, total productive maintenance, and really helping to deploy with that. So in 99, I joined Marshall Institute, got a chance to take that, like you said, into all kinds of companies globally and around the United States. And, I've had a chance to just learn a lot about deployment and things that are really good to do and things that one should avoid doing in the TPM journey.
And for those unfamiliar with the Marshall Institute, it's an asset management consulting and training provider based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And you guys operate worldwide and provide consulting and training services, correct?
That's correct. We have really two major portions of our business. One is a training business where people can attend public seminars on all topics around maintenance and reliability, planning, scheduling, storeroom control, strategic maintenance leadership, you know, maintenance and reliability management diploma series through NC State that we teach the courses on. And the other side of our business is consulting. So we'll go into organizations, help them to set those systems up, help them to deploy the systems that they've been learning about. And we find that the two parts of the business work really well together because the public seminars help the materials that we have put together for public seminars we'll use when we're doing deployments in facilities. And the lessons from deployments will help us to have the best public seminar material that we can have as we're doing that trip.
Very good, very good. I find they complement each other well as well. So, now, Greg, how long have you been involved with TPM?
I've been involved with TPM in about 1991. I was asked to attend my first TPM training. I was in a maintenance crew. I was working as an electrician. I had been involved with some teams. And they asked me, my maintenance manager at the time, Dave Covey, just asked me to go and sit in on the seminar that was happening. It was actually pretty cool. It was an early satellite broadcast that was happening with some TPM practitioners. And I got pretty excited about the things that I learned about the partnerships, and I was pretty passionate about maintenance in general, so these two things connected very well together. So we went back and formed a couple teams, and then in about 92, I got asked to be a full-time resource driving the TPM process at SKF Bearings, Jamestown, New York.
You've been involved with TPM from all aspects and bring a wide range of experience then with TPM. So with that, can you explain to our listeners what TPM actually is? I've heard it is total productive maintenance. There's pillars, there's a whole base behind that, but can you explain to our listeners who may not be familiar with it what it actually is?
Sure. TPM is probably doing the common sense things that one should be doing on an asset to care for it. And it really is about the basics. It's about cleaning properly, inspecting properly, maintaining properly. It's about partnership. So the TPM process is really about involving all of the people who are touching the asset, whether it's from the maintenance side or the operations side, in the care of that asset. So let's clean it the right way, let's lubricate it the right way. A lot of times we'll call it TLC, right? Let's just make sure that we tighten, lubricate, and clean properly, and we'll make a big difference on how that asset runs. So it's really common sense, basic practices that involve all of the employees in the care, maintenance, and ultimately selection of the best asset to maximize performance.
Oh, very good summary. Thank you, Greg.
Sure.
Now that we have an understanding of TPM, what are the pillars that are part of TPM or that make up TPM. And can you explain what each one of those are for our listeners?
I sure can. So I think one of the beauties of the TPM process, and one of the things that we do, is we tend to refer to TPM as Total Process Reliability, TPR. And that's because we really are talking about total, all people be involved in the processes that we need to increase our reliability. And, you know, we know that that can't be done by just maintenance. I mean, maintenance clearly has a key role in helping ensure the reliability of an asset. But what people on the shop floor do, what the operators, and what decisions operations makes as a whole affects the reliability just as much as what maintenance does. So there's about five focus areas that we're looking at, and some people call them pillars, and we use a puzzle, but there's these kind of five focus areas. The first one is maintenance excellence, and we're really looking at, from the Marshall Institute perspective, we're looking at how we, the processes and practices and organization that we use as the maintenance group to ensure that PMs and planned work is executed in an efficient and effective manner. So maintenance excellence is kind of that bottom right-hand cornerstone for us in our little puzzle that we've got. And we like the puzzle because the maintenance excellence must interface with operations. So we call it basic equipment care, and this is the daily, weekly, monthly practices that operations is doing to help with the care of that asset. So traditionally, folks refer to it as autonomous maintenance. This basic equipment care is about making sure that the fundamental activities that are directly correlated to reliability are happening. So for example, if we're not cleaning an asset, we're not seeing a lot of defects that might be on that asset. And so when we clean, we inspect. And when we inspect, we find and detect these abnormalities, and then we get them into the maintenance system, or we get them repaired and we get them fixed. So maintenance excellence is one piece, basic equipment care is piece number two. The third piece that we look at is what we call equipment improvement. And equipment improvement centers on how do we solve chronic reoccurring problems on an asset. So when we purchase an asset, it doesn't have the best pump that it could have or the best proximity switch, and we're having a lot of failures due to that component or some particular problem the machine's got. So in equipment improvement, we are forming small teams that are looking at resolving and eliminating those chronic problems so that we can reduce the need to be out there fixing and shaking and poking things on a routine basis. The bottom left corner of the puzzle for us is what we call equipment design excellence. And equipment design excellence is how we purchase, select, install assets, all the things that we do before we commission it to production. Because what we do in that selection process, which machine we select, which parts and components make that asset up, how well we prepare spare parts and training and PMs before we release it to production, are all correlated and critical elements for high reliability. And then in the center of our puzzle, we've got knowledge and skills. And the knowledge and skills is looking at across all those puzzle pieces, and this is the one center puzzle piece that connects them all together. So knowledge and skills is looking at how well we train an operator is key to how well that asset's going to run. How much experience that operator gets, how they get that knowledge, is going to make a big difference on the problems that we have in that asset. So, you know, an operator is going to figure out how to run the machine. The question is, do you train them properly through some kind of mentor training practice that's formalized and structured, or do you give them the keys to the machine and say, you know, go drive it, in which case they're going to smash it and crash it and have all kinds of jam-ups. So maintenance excellence connected to basic equipment care, connected to equipment improvement, connected to equipment design excellence, and kind of all wrapped around training and skill development is going to be core to high reliability and asset in a facility. And those groups, maintenance, operations, training, and engineering, there's probably a few others, purchasing and some other folks, but those groups must partner together to get the highest reliability out of an asset in the facility.
Absolutely. I'm glad you touched on and your model includes the knowledge and skills component, because I find the operator knowledge and skills is often overlooked as a key part of that overall reliability success.
It's true. And if you don't think the operator knowledge is connected and experience is connected to the cost of maintenance, then hand the keys to your car to your 17-year-old son, because the cost of maintenance will go up.
Yes, yes it will. Now, if an organization was able to be successful in these five pieces, maintenance excellence, basic care, equipment improvement, equipment design excellence, and knowledge and skills, what sort of benefits would they expect to see?
Well, the most immediate benefit is should be the uptime of the asset. So we're going to be looking for the assets where production is constrained and those that have reliability issues. We want to go in and really look at how these pieces are not interconnecting the way they should interconnect and start to really smooth that workflow out. So I heard someone say the other day, there's big dollars and little dollars. The big dollars is better production output and more capacity out of the plant. And to the extent that you can find a constrained piece of equipment that increases the output of the plant overall, that's where your big dollars are going to be. The little dollars are going to be in increased maintenance efficiency and, you know, decreased frustration and things that would affect the way we do business every day. So I'm going to be looking for increased output and reduced downtime as the big outputs.
Now, when I look at your model, it's not just about maintenance. You talk about equipment design excellence. So we're designing stuff right. We're pay a little bit more upfront for better life cycle costs. We're focused on skills and capability across operations as well. So how does this fit into an overall asset management strategy, or is this the asset management framework?
To us, total process reliability, which is, you know, derived from all PTPM principles, it is an overall asset management strategy. It is how we're going to get the partnerships, how we're going to get the organizational support. It is how we're going to get all of the different parts of the business operating as one unit and not separate, distinct units, each of which is trying to be successful but sub-optimizing the other parts of the system. I mean, we know that purchasing can be very effective at cutting costs and reducing the cost of spare parts, but if we're not partnered with the operations and maintenance, then we're having increased downtime as a result of buying a cheaper bearing or proximity switch or pump. That sub-optimized our entire output of our plant. $1 million saved in purchasing, $5 million more costs and less production output, that wasn't a good deal. So we want to get together and figure out how we reduce purchasing costs or how we buy the most optimal piece of equipment from an engineering perspective while maintaining the best output for the plant. So we're trying to pull these things together into both into the asset management strategy that is going to, you know, be required to have partnership from all parts.
So I'm assuming there's a lot of pre-work involved with this where you're doing the stakeholder analysis from the senior executive suite down to the people on the floor to make sure that we do cover all these various aspects of this asset management model.
Correct. I mean, so our first step, what we're going to do, and it really doesn't matter if we're doing it or anybody's going forward. If you're thinking about moving forward with the TPM journey, the first thing you need to understand is what are the strengths that you've got in your current environment and culture that you'd be able to leverage and enhance your TPM journey. So you may have some existing teams or existing systems that are going to be very useful. Maybe a training process that's going to be useful in moving the TPM journey forward. And then you're going to find a series of gaps, opportunities where clearly operations is not partnering with maintenance on creating a schedule that both maintains the asset uptime and production capacity. So we need to find those places where our first step is going to be to understand the gaps, the opportunities, the strengths, build a plan that's going to start to move us towards this future state of the partnerships that we need for higher reliability.
So I'm assuming that is a key requirement to make TPM successful.
It is, and what you said, James, is critical as well. This is a journey that spans both leadership and shop floor. So you go into lots of organizations, and maybe the leadership wants to make the TPM process happen. Heard something, seen something, read something, and say, hey, this is what I need my plant to operate. And then, but the shop floor is locked up because they don't think this thing's going to sustain. They don't think this thing's going to, you know, be there next year. The next shiny ball management is changing, those kinds of things. And leadership can provide the environment, but the people on the shop floor know what the issues are. They have lots of solutions to those problems, and there's many hands to make this work happen when you engage the shop floor. So we have to get both, really, upper leadership, middle management, and shop floor engaged across maintenance, engineering, production, purchasing, those kinds of cross-functional.
Would you say that's the most common cause of TPM not being successful, is not getting that alignment and that buy-in?
Yeah. I wish there was one single little shiny thing that was always why TPM failed. But, you know, the reality is that you've got to get about four or five things lining up in the right direction to be successful. So one of those is leadership, vision, and constancy of purpose, right? So PBM efforts fail because leadership gets excited, heads down a direction, does not have the constancy and purpose to see it through long enough to get the systems engaged. So that's one failure point. Another failure point that you'll see in the PBM journey is that we fail to really engage the shop floor early enough and in meaningful ways. And again, they've got lots of hands and lots of ideas, and they're feeling the pain of problems happening all the time. So we've got to make sure that we get over whatever cultural barriers might have them to not be involved. You know, at my facility where I was deploying, so I mean, I had the opportunity for about 9 years to be involved with the deployment of a TPM process. And so we went through leadership changes where their objectives might be different when they come in from the new leader. We went through union issues that might come along and all the things that go along with, you know, things getting a little bit tense between the company and you. We went through layoffs and financial issues, and we went through the other end of the pendulum, which was the, we were so busy you couldn't dream of shutting a machine down to maintain it. And what I got to learn through all of that is, number one, PBM, and more specifically, reliability as a predominant culture in the organization is always the right thing to do. It is never the right time to do it. You're always too busy. You're always too poor. You're always too under-resourced or whatever. But you've got to set strategically that this is something you're going to figure out how to make happen, because it will make a huge difference in how your facility works.
Yeah, absolutely. Maintenance alone can improve reliability. That's built into the equipment. But what we can do is ensure that the reliability program guarantees that level of reliability from that equipment, and it delivers at that performance that we required and it was designed for. And like you said, it's either we're too busy or we never have money or resources to do it, but it is something that needs to be done to maximize the value for the organization. Now, we want to implement TPM, and there's a key part you talked about, the basic care part. That's where operators are going to do some cleaning, maybe some inspection, maybe some minor repairs, adjustments, that sort of thing. What level of training is required for them? Do they need to become full-fledged industrial millwrights or mechanics or toolmakers? Or what is the right level of training for them?
I'd say absolutely not to become full-fledged mechanics or toolmakers. The right level is a little bit dependent on the facility. So you go into some facilities, and my TV employment was in a highly unionized environment where it was very defined what operators could and could not do, and what maintenance could and could not do, and even within maintenance, what electricians or mechanics could do. And so, yeah, it was still meaningful and significant that operators clean and inspected their equipment on a routine basis. And it turns out, you know, you certainly don't have to be a millwright to clean a machine, but there are some tricks to cleaning the machine and not messing it up. If you want to see a good example of that, go watch a sanitation crew cleaning of any kind of food industry in the middle of the night with some, you know, often fairly inexperienced employees. You can mess machines up if you don't clean them right. But on the other hand, if you don't clean them, you will allow contamination to build up, you will allow defects to accumulate on your assets, and it will continue to build and build and build where you just can't keep this asset running. So we need to train them on basic care practices. We need to train them on inspection and cleaning being a form of inspection and what to look for when they're doing those activities. Like you said, in some environments, I've got a client that several clients, but one I'm going to next week, that they have a deep culture of multiple levels of operators. And they have an expert on the job training program to be certified as a level 1 operator. You learn how to do the operation basics and the cleaning basics and some basic cleaning and inspection on the machine. And at a level 2, you pick up some other activities that are going to involve some minor lubrication and some adjustments. And then you get to the level 3 and they're doing full blown PMs at an operator level. So that's a phenomenal deployment of TPM. And a culture that, you know, many plants would come and try to get to. But back in my union facility, we weren't trying to get operators necessarily, you know, full-blown PM tasks and turn wrenches.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL blended learning for maintenance reliability professionals. This SMRP accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
So they can better run it properly. There's all those benefits I found.
Yeah, and I also find that as you move towards, you know, more visual controls and ultimately leading to more center-lined activities where, you know, we know that pressure gauge is supposed to be at 40 feet of sign, and when it changes, it means something's changing on the machine. I mean, the typical environment is, as that pressure falls off and the cylinder's leaking, we just adjust the pressure up, and we just keep adjusting and adjusting and adjusting. We're not looking for what's changing in the machine. So it is a mature company that is understanding that when we market at 40 and it starts to deviate from 40, it's because something's changing on that machine. And it's a defect, most likely, in some particular part of the machine. If we understand it that early, we are addressing failure way back on the quote-unquote PDAF curve, the potential to functional failure curve that any kind of component goes to.
Now, you mentioned that in your past experience, there wasn't a level where the organization wanted the operators to become mechanics or to be doing those PMs. Some organizations may want that. So should the mechanics and electricians and the other skilled trades be concerned about their role and job with when a company goes to implement TPM?
Well, my first answer is no, because what you're going to find in any deployment, you know, when you go into a company that's going down this TPM journey, there is so much work to be done and not enough people to do it. So what's happening? I mean, maintenance folks are running around, you know, reactive environment, fixing machines, and, you know, they're busy, they're working hard, but we're not doing the proper PMs and the proper predictive maintenance, the root cause analysis that we should be doing to prevent these problems. We're not doing the right stuff, we're just keeping everything running. And because we're running in that environment, companies tend to run on the minimal amount of maintenance people that they can get by with, because they're just targeting to keep the equipment running and how many people do I need to keep it up and running. So what happens is we are trying to transition. Anything that we would have an operator do, let's just say that we're going to have them fill an oil reservoir, it's to free a maintenance technician up to do root cause analysis for a proper PDM or a proper installation and alignment using laser alignment or whatever those tool sets are. So we are trying to have the common day-to-day activities, and like you said, different companies can go to different levels, common day-to-day activities happening with the people who are closest to the machine, and we're trying to make sure that we develop the skills and the technical capabilities for professional maintenance to happen where we can be focusing on the predictive tools, the PMs, the root cause analysis, all of the right stuff that's going to help to reduce failure and increase capacity. And the other thing I would say is a company needs to be efficient. I was in a union environment, and I figured out early on the only way as a union member that I was going to make more money was for this company to be healthy. Because if it ain't healthy, none of us are getting raises, and it's going to be pretty ugly around here. So the best thing for me to do was to find ways to increase the efficiency so that we were in a stronger position. Whether I'm an union or non-union, the best way to increase my personal income is to have a company that's being healthy, being profitable, and that will trickle its way down to my pocket at some point. So you want to make sure that we are all moving in that direction. We are more often looking to supplement maintenance resource, and it's never or that we were, are looking to reduce it. It's not the case. It's almost always it's understaffed.
Yeah, and that's been my experience is when we do TPM, the mechanics now, instead of doing that basic cleaning task, can focus on a root cause analysis. They can learn precision alignment or vibration analysis because now they have time to do that. Whereas before, that was just a pipe dream.
And a lot of times the mechanic is just rumbling when he has to go down into that pit and there's chips down in there and saying, why doesn't operations ever clean this thing out? And, you know, the answer to that question is, one, because we haven't figured out a way to keep the chips out. If I clean it, it'll be just to pull them out. And two, there's no organizational discipline to cause that to happen on a routine basis. So really what's going to happen is like you said, we're going to transition to more high-tech skills for maintenance folks. We're going to engage the operations folks. And look, there's a principle here. You don't care for an asset. You don't care about the asset. If you go out and buy a brand new shiny John Deere lawnmower and mow your lawn, I'll bet you you wash it and clean it up when you get done because you care about that asset. And to the extent that you start to drift away from that behavior, that asset will deteriorate in direct correlation to that care.
Absolutely. I haven't heard it put that way, but that is a great way to put it. If you don't care for the asset, you don't care about the asset. So Greg, over your vast amount of experience with this, do you have any tips or words of wisdom you'd like to share with people who are looking to implement TPM or are in the beginning stages of implementing TPM?
If you're in the beginning stages of implementing TPM, my advice is get your leadership structure in place. You know, you should really be working on getting your core group of supporters together. You know, when you look around the organization, you can see some people who are really strongly supporting that this is the right thing to do. It's people who don't care so much. And you're going to try to get those people moving forward in environments where they begin to put their passion for TPM into an actionable way. I'm not going to plug Marshall Institute or any other consulting firm, but there is definitely value. I was an internal resource in my company saying TPM is the thing to do after I got this passion. But you know what? A prophet's not accepted in its own town very often. So they're kind of saying, well, that's Greg the electrician. What did he know about what SKF needs to do overall? So I was probably saying the exact thing as the consultant that I brought in to do some training and exposure to the TPM process from an external perspective. So use wisely external resources, whether they're consultants, corporate folks, customers that are trying to drive down this path. Use those resources wisely because they will help create levers for change to happen. And so you're getting your internal resources together in a way that they can solidify their commitment. You're looking for these external resources and levers that can help you to push this ball in the direction. And then you're looking for shop floor engagement to really create significant visual change happening on the shop floor.
Very good tip. Thank you. On the flip side, what is the one thing you see done incorrectly when implementing TPM that we want to avoid?
The most incorrect thing that people do is they do not keep. So when we're setting up that core group of supporters that I was talking about, we're going to turn that into a team, a steering committee or a leadership team that's going to provide direction, 5-year plan, 1-year plan, keep us tasked, follow up with sub teams and make sure things are moving forward. That's going to both help build the team culture that we need. That team is going to be cross-functional across all the departments that we've talked about. That team is going to be vertically integrated, you know, from the shop floor up to the leadership. So how do they fail? They stop. They lose sight of the importance of that cross-functional, vertically integrated team moving this thing forward. And they start to believe TPM is a culture that is cultivated by people of passion in the organization. People believe this is the right direction to go because it's hard. It's never easy to change how people are doing things on a day-to-day basis. So that passion, it turns into systems. But there are always people who can need to watch, monitor, and help sustain this process as we move forward. I equate it to a garden. When I walk into a plant that has proper deployed TPM, I can see rows and I can see, you know, certain crops here and certain crops here, and there's no weeds popping up, and everything is organized in its place. Now, what I want to know is show me the gardener, because somebody's doing it. Somebody is keeping their eye on the ball, because guess what? If you quit gardening, weeds pop up, and bugs eat, and corruption comes in. So if you stop focusing on your TPM journey, and you stop making it an important business system, people will slide back, and the weeds will pop up. And you have to make sure you've got mechanisms. So I think one of the biggest failures is leadership taking their eye off the ball, not keeping the steering committee going forward. Number two, believing it's all self-lubricated and moving forward, and they can stop paying attention to it, when in actuality, there has to be little micro-gardeners out there making sure it's all being paid attention to.
It's very, very good words of wisdom, is making sure we have that engagement, that support, and we're supporting those people who are doing that actual work to keep it going and keep it moving forward.
And we do drive that to the floor. So the closer we can get all of that to the point of use, the better off it's going to be.
Now, if you had a magic wand and you could make any changes to TPM, what would that one thing be?
Well, we've done a lot of it, so I don't know if it's a magic wand or not. So total productive maintenance is a misunderstood, assumed term. So when somebody tells me they're doing TPM, I don't know what they mean. Because a lot of times they just mean autonomous maintenance. A lot of people just take the word total productive maintenance and they say, well, I don't know exactly what you mean by total and productive, but I know what maintenance is, and that's not me, Mr. Operator, and Mrs. Operator. So the term total productive maintenance, even though it's pretty well recognized and it's got, you know, this name brand associated to it, that term is all of the terms in a typical, when we talk about autonomous maintenance, the overall term TPM maintenance, those are words that, as they were translated from Japanese into English, there's kind of a little loss there, right? So my operators, the reason we call it basic equipment care, and I started doing it at SKF, because my operators didn't know exactly what autonomous maintenance was. They didn't know exactly what autonomous was. They knew what maintenance was, and that wasn't them, right? So as we just started saying, look, this is just basic equipment care. It's cleaning. It's inspecting. It's reporting defects. It's minor lubrication. As we began to just break it down to its basic components, the message got a lot more palatable to the shop floor. So I think one of the biggest things that I would and have as in my position at Marshall Institute changed about TPM is the terminology that's associated with it. Traditional five pieces that I talked about, professional maintenance I like. Land maintenance is the term that's often used around the traditional pillars of TPM. Autonomous maintenance, we use basic equipment care. Focused improvement, we use equipment improvement. That one would work okay either way for me. In the traditional one, it's called early equipment management, and people don't tend to know what it means. So equipment design excellence is a little bit more inherent. So a lot of the changes that we've made in the TPM process, blasphemous they may be, are to make it much more palatable in a typical U.S. environment that we're deploying. Even though we do worldwide deployments, you know, similar translation issues to other languages. In English, these words work better. Just one other thing I would change if I had a magic wand is I think OEE is a good measure. Overall equipment effectiveness often is associated with TPM. It's kind of one of the core central metrics. But again, the amount of variation in what people mean when they say OEE is immense. And the amount of abuse of people trying to deploy OEE in ways across the corporation that do not lead to truly understanding the fundamental issues on the machine this fast. And so I would rebrand OED. I would use OED as a very specific, I'm going to understand the problems on this machine. I love the categories in OED. I'm not going to talk about that, but OED is often misused, and I would change the way that's utilized if I had a bigger magic wand.
Yeah, I see OEE misused everywhere, from the calculation to what it means. It's a common thing, so I fully agree with that 100%. Now, we're getting close to the end of this, but I got one more question for you. What is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today? The one thing they can do and implement sooner than later?
I think the one thing that you can do sooner rather than later, that is a TPM principle, is find a common problem that's happening on a machine and get maintenance and operations and engineering at the table and use that cross-functional platform to solve a problem that people are having. My TPM implementation grew out of passion for maintenance and reliability in the position that I ended up in because I was passionate about machines running well. And so if you can take that passion, as me as an electrician, I couldn't fix it. But when all of a sudden I've got this environment where I can pull together a mechanic and I can pull an operator and I can pull an engineer and we can start talking about this together, we began to solve problems. I mean, the first machine that we really pulled a small team together on, we increased unknowingly. We were trying to solve a problem that kept breaking and it was a pain in the butt for the operator when it broke and it cost off any scrap and cleanup issues, and it was a pain for me as an electrician to go and fix the problem. It took 4 hours. It was hard to do. And when we passionately went after that problem, fortunate for us, we increased the output of that asset by 16%. The production supervisor came and said, "You guys know that you just made this machine, our most critical machine, run 16% more output for the last 2 months." And we're like, "No, we didn't know that." And so if you can get, you know, one of your listeners out there can go out and have a machine that's having problems, pull the right team together, and just get that cross-functional brainstorming, they can make a difference in their plant tomorrow. And that difference can catch people's attention. And in my case, that led to, let's do some more machines like that. Let's get some more teams formed together. Oh, let's go learn more about what TPM says we should be doing. Let's go ahead and track some downtime and do that up front. Let's review the PMs while we're at it. I mean, are we gonna sustain it if we don't get the PMs right? And that passion, cross-functional approach led to a TPM deployment a few years later, where it became a plant-wide, actually division-wide deployment of TPM.
That's an excellent takeaway, Greg. Thank you very much for that. Now, where can people find out more about you, the Marshall Institute? Where are you guys going to be at?
Well, the first place you can find out more about us is marshallinstitute.com. So we've got a website, you can go and you can understand more about the training courses that we offer and the consulting services that we offer to companies all over the world. Secondly, we're pretty involved in things like SMRP, Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. SMRP is a great organization that, even without reference to Marshall Institute, you should be involved with as a reliability professional, a maintenance professional. And SMRP has an annual conference that is phenomenal. We always have a booth at SMRP. It's in October of every year. So you should come by our booth and look us up if you're going to be at SMRP. SMRP, 2 weeks from now, has a symposium in Atlanta. I'm going to be down there doing a seminar presentation conference on lean maintenance practice, how we kind of connect lean manufacturing and maintenance together and some ways that maintenance could benefit from that. Yeah, I'm sure you'll put some contact information, but if anybody has questions and they want to give me a call, as you can tell, I like to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, we all do, I find.
Yeah, so we probably wouldn't be here if we weren't pretty passionate about it. So
I'll make sure to include the links in the show notes to the Marshall Institute website, the SMRP conference, SMRP, your contact page. Is there any resources you have on this that you can share with our listeners? Is there a post on your website? Do you have a paper or something you want to, that people can look
at? Yeah, I'll have to get you some info on that, James. But one thing, we have a YouTube channel that has a bunch of TPM videos that I did several years, and I was a little bit heavier back then. But that aside, I had done some videos on, the five elements of TPM that we're talking about. I had done some YouTube videos on defect tagging and visual control application. And they're just little 5-minute snippets, but they're something that really could be an asset. And you can either get those through the website, or I'll get you a marketing folks to get you a link to those videos. And there's a whole bunch of blogs. There's a whole bunch of TPM tips and blogs up on our website as well. If you link up to some of that.
All right. Excellent. I would definitely include those in the show notes. Well, Greg, thank you very much. I know I learned some more about TPM having this conversation with you, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. I appreciate the time you spent to educate everyone and share your vast knowledge around this topic. So thank you very much.
Hey, James, my pleasure. It's been fun just chatting with you about it. If it can help somebody out there in podcast land or it can help somebody with a TPM journey, it's all worth it.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you, Greg, and you have yourself a great day.
Thank you, James. Thanks.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.